was not excited about this production literally 20 minutes ago, and now I'm ready to buy tickets.
Yeah, I can't be mad, but I'm also... I actually feel maybe no emotions towards this.
I don't know how I feel about it, and I don't know that I care to see it. Sorry.
Act Two happened, emotionally wrecked me. I was a puddle by the end. I was literally made up of only tears.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Off to Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, it is all about the upcoming Broadway season. It's time for our season preview, part one. Part two will be in 2 weeks from now, but we are starting in New York, mostly Broadway. We will touch on some of the out-of-towns that are currently happening. And as always, only musicals.
It's shaping up to be an interesting season, and really only like the fall is really defined at this point. Spring, I feel like we know very little about at this point. It's all rumors and gossip and revivals.
Well, like, the fall is very defined, and also at the same time, it's like, is there room for anything else to come in this season? Because it feels like 20 million things are opening in like a month from now, you know?
Yes. Let's talk about the new musicals this fall. We'll talk about like revivals later, but the new musicals, the ones I have here are Almost Famous, Kimberly Akimbo, A Beautiful Noise, K-Pop, Some Like It Hot, and Juliet. And then kind of in the spring...
And A Beautiful Noise. Did you say that?
I said A Beautiful Noise. In the spring, for new musicals, we know Back to the Future.
Yeah.
We know New York, New York.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Sing Street, but I don't trust anything Sing Street says. So yeah, already, that's... Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six new musicals this fall. Plus 1, 2, let's say 3 in the spring. That's already a lot.
And the revivals, out of hand.
Absolutely. So we already know Into the Woods already open. It's been open very early, the City Center transfer. Then we know this fall, 1776 is transferring from
ART,
a Diane Paulus directed production. And then we also have an announced Camelot at the Vivian Beaumont in the spring.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the only... for sure revivals that are happening. There's some rumored situations.
Well, there's some like hefty rumors. Let's start with the like biggest, almost 100% transfer, which would be Merrily, because it is opening off Broadway. And where is it playing again? New York Theater Workshop?
New York Theater Workshop?
I think so. And I would be shocked if this does not transfer to Broadway immediately after closing, which is in January.
Yeah, I don't even think it will extend, because I don't think they'll have the time if they want to give their cast like a little break before opening in time for the 2023 Tony Awards.
Well, also because we're dealing with, in my mind, two high-profile people, one being Daniel Radcliffe, obviously, and two being Jonathan Groff. I mean, Lindsay Mendez is also on, like, many TV shows, so...
Yes, is All Rise still on?
I don't know.
The first season, and then the second season, and I think the third season moved to, like, Oprah's network? Did I make that up?
Wow.
Okay, let me do a quick Google.
That seems like a interesting network movement, you know?
Picked up for a third season by the Oprah Winfrey Network. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for this knowledge in my brain. And I don't know if there's going to be a season 4. We shall see.
Well, but regardless, technically three pretty like high profile working people. The highest of profiles being Daniel Radcliffe. So again,
the
off-Broadway production starts in November, scheduled to run till the first week of January. And then I can see like Into the Woods style, like 3-4 weeks off and then immediate transfer.
Yeah, let's say like preview start March. So
yeah.
Preview start March, open April.
And then
A limited run.
Yeah.
But Daniel Radcliffe has committed for year-long runs on Broadway before.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know,
it's more Groff that I think is busier than
him. That's so true. He did maybe like a 6 or 7 month run in Little Shop.
That's true.
So,
but since Little Shop, he did like The Matrix, so that's pretty.
There was a pandemic there too. To 3, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know, we can't use like the past 3 years as a proper judge of what people are doing because no. it just wasn't a normal time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he left kind of January-ish from Little Shop.
And then to keep the Sondheim Renaissance alive, rumored Sweeney Todd with Josh Groban, Annaleigh Ashford. We don't even have like an inkling of when that could start, but if it's going to be pre-Tonys, it has to be before end of April. So, okay, we have to stop this episode because as we were recording our next episode, which is the Toronto season preview, literally 1 hour post-episode record did we receive the breaking news that Sweeney Todd, starring Josh Groban and Annaleigh Ashford, is in fact coming to Broadway next season. It is opening at the Lunt-Fontaine in February, but the best part, with a 26-person orchestra?
That's absolutely thrilling. It's so thrilling.
I was not excited about this production literally 20 minutes ago, and now I'm ready to buy tickets.
To hear the original orchestrations as they were intended for the, as they were played the first time it ever played on Broadway, we're blessed. We're blessed with that.
So we never timestamped this, but we probably should. We recorded our New York season preview on September 5th. This is the day, this is the hour that Sweeney Todd has announced that they are transferring. Tommy Kail is
a low-key
directing.
Instagram post.
Yeah. Low-key Instagram post with a location tag of Lunt-Fontaine. The reason that I know more information is because Sneaky Ticketmaster has released the full bio, and the dates. So I do think it's going to be a really expensive ticket, but we'll see what happens. Tommy Kail is directing. Alex Lacamoire is music directing. I can't believe Lynn is not attached to this project. I feel like he should be. But yeah, I'm really excited about this 26-person orchestra.
That's
so exciting.
It's pretty thrilling. Yeah, it just got really more interesting. Like, we knew, but now we know.
Exactly.
So exciting stuff.
And back to the rest of the episode. Enjoy.
It's kind of reminding me of when they did the Sunday in the Park with George, also with Annaleigh Ashford, and Jake Gyllenhaal, and they didn't do 8 performances a week. They like kind of took themselves out of Tony consideration. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're going to be doing with this because again,
you don't think
it's
Josh Groban wants
rumor.
A Tony? I think Josh Groban
actually
wants
does,
a Tony.
Though. That's true.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal was like, you know, it's fine. Josh Groban's like, I've been waiting for this.
He's like, I'm not doing this if this is not up for contention. Yeah. The reason that they didn't is. For Sunday in the Park with George that time was because it was a short run and they weren't doing 8 performances a week, so it would be a lot of tickets to give to voters that would like take away from them making money. There was also rumors that that's what would be happening with this Into the Woods, but Tony voters were invited. We're still going. It's still happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, so then, and if we're talking about maybe one more revival.
There's 2 more, I think, potentials, but go for it.
Okay. The Cabaret from the West End.
Yes.
Do we need another Cabaret revival? I mean, maybe always. Maybe we always do.
I mean, it's the latest rumor, which I was like shocked to read and then told you about it. And I was like, I don't really believe, but you never know, is that A Strange Loop will be leaving the Lyceum like imminently and Cabaret will make its transfer at the Lyceum, which I think is a bad place for that show, but that's just me.
So Strange Loop was the first time I was in the Lyceum, and I actually liked it. Mm-hmm. I sat kind of back mezz, mm-hmm. and I thought I had a very good view. I liked how kind of small it felt.
Yes.
Which
but
is
I think
why
they're
I think
doing
it might be good.
A lot with the staging in this version of Cabaret, and just from seeing those like random videos of Eddie Redmayne bowing, weren't they like in the center? Like in the round.
But yeah. this is an issue we talk about all the time. There's not enough flexible theaters on Broadway. You really only have Circle in the Square, which is taken up for K-pop, which we feel like has been waiting for Circle to be open.
For like 3 years.
Forever.
4 years.
We've like,
yeah.
K-pop is coming, but Circle's not available. Circle's not available.
Yeah.
So now that K-pop has Circle, there's no other theaters. The other semi-flexible but not even is the Vivian Beaumont, but that's obviously not the right space for it. That's clearly
no
a horrible space for
imagine
Cabaret.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bright and like clear in there.
It
and
would bring
Cabaret
out
needs
the...
to be somewhere dirty. Cabaret I needs have... to be somewhere. And to be honest, like the Lyceum, that was my first time in it, but I was like, I walked in, I'm like, where's the bathroom? This lobby is 3 feet by 3 feet. I don't know where I'm going. I'm climbing over people.
You know what would be dirty for a cabaret? Belasco.
We can't put every show in the Belasco.
But I love the Belasco, and it's never used for things that I want it to be used for. So this is how
Belasco
I feel
right now.
Well, it was supposed to be To Kill a Mockingbird, remember? Right. Yeah. So I don't know.
Girl
maybe
from
a play.
North Country.
Yeah.
Remember her? She was at the Belasco, and then To Kill a Mockingbird was supposed to go in, and then obviously didn't.
Cancelled. Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on in the Belasco right now. But yeah, and I also think if cabaret comes.
Uh-huh.
That could be a really fun place for a stunt cast.
Oh, totally. They would not bring the show without stunt casting it up because what's the point?
I don't know. I think there's room to stunt cast, like, the MC for sure, and also Sally Bowles because the talent level of Sally Bowles is always in question. So if you cast someone really talented, that works, and if you cast someone, let's say, less so, that also works.
So what I've taken away from this season on Broadway is that we're just stunt casting revivals and that's it.
Yes. I mean, yes.
Right.
There's, like, many different types of stunt casting, obviously. And, like, I don't consider, let's say, like, Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff in Merrily as stunt casting. Because
I think it is, but I agree that it's not, like, Emma Stone, you know? But I think it is a stunt
cast. No, it's not,
because
not even for their, like, star level. It's more their ability. Like, these are theater people who are famous for other things, not people who are famous for other things just being like, let's try theater.
I would argue that Daniel Radcliffe is not a theater person. He's an actor that has done theater.
See, this is the thing. He got a job when he was 10 years old.
Yeah.
In film. In film. But I think he's always been a theater kid at heart. And
the other issue with him, and this is just, like, will be for the rest of his life, is that, like, he's always Harry Potter. So, like, you gotta be careful with the stuff that you put him in, because that's the character that everyone will just see, you know?
Well, if you want to see Harry Potter on Broadway, you can go down the street to
the Not the same. Not the same. But even, like, this, like, Al Yankovic movie that's out, by the time this episode comes out, all I see is Harry Potter, because
really?
He's wearing the freaking circle glasses.
Really? I think... I don't know if I haven't seen him in anything that recently, but no, I don't know if I see Harry Potter that much on
That's good. I hope that more people are like you and not like me, because I find it, like, not distracting, but I don't know. I think when this Merrily was announced and he was the first person attached to the project, I was like, really? What a choice. Like, I just didn't think that he would be interested in something like this.
He's a theater kid. You know, he was scouted for Harry Potter with his parents watching a play, while he was watching a play. Like, he is a theater kid.
I still see it as, like, an actor to stage actor. But that's, again, because, like, he's been in film since he was a child, so...
It's not his fault that that was his first job. It's not his fault that he looked like Harry Potter as a 10-year-old.
No, you're right. But then in terms of stunt casting, like, I'm sorry, but Into the Woods is stunt casting it up with the best of Broadway. I know that they're all theater people, and I love that they're doing this, but
I feel like this is where we talk about the difference between stunt casting and star casting, and I think Into the Woods is star cast, and I also think Merrily is star cast.
Do you think that Sarah Bareilles is a star or stunt cast for Into the Woods?
When she was in Waitress, she was a stunt cast.
Well, but was she, though? Because it's her show.
That makes it the ultimate stunt. Like,
I guess.
I think. That makes it the ultimate stunt. But now that she's, like, so much more ingrained in the theater community, she moves to being a star cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. What was the other show? Oh, Josh Groban and Annalee Ashford.
Josh is a stunt.
Cast. Yeah, Josh is a stunt I know. Cast. And yes, he was on
it's
Broadway
just a feeling.
Previously.
It's just a feeling. There's no clear and hard and fast rules. It's just a feeling. Josh is a stunt cast.
Because he's gunning for that Tony Award. That's why it's a stunt cast.
Yes, because he's not doing out of towns. He's not doing off-Broadway productions. He's going straight to Broadway, which is one thing. I feel like Daniel Radcliffe will do theater other places. Like, he's doing this off-Broadway. Like, he...
Yeah, but he's doing this off-Broadway to get to Broadway, I feel. I think all three of them are doing it for the same reason Into the Woods
It's
moved.
Also... No, but it's also, like, a prestigious show to do, Merrily, you know?
Yeah.
Well, like, when Josh Groban was in Great Comet, he did not do the out-of-towns. He did not do the workshops.
Oh,
correct me if I'm wrong. He just went straight to Broadway.
Yeah, and I would also argue that, again, like, we have not seen Sweeney Todd on stage, but, you know, when you're thinking of people to play Sweeney Todd himself, Josh Groban is not top of list for me. He's probably not even bottom of list. He's not even on the list, so
vocally, agreed. Though? Vocally?
Great. I don't think vocally he fits this. I think vocally, great, but not for this.
Really?
Yeah. It's too Josh Groban. Like,
I mean,
he has such a type.
Josh Groban, I think, is a good actor, and I think he's, like, very funny.
This is not that.
I know, but I think, like, he can play, like, a character. Like, he's good at doing a character.
I hope that this proves me wrong, but I think there's probably a lot of, like, extremely positive thoughts on him entering this role. Should it happen, this, again, by the time... I mean, we are pre-recording this, so maybe it will be announced by the time this episode comes out. But, like, again, I think there are a lot of people that are, like, on the Josh Groban camp, and then I also think there are a lot of people being like, why him? Like, anyone but him. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting. Like, I do think a lot of times producers, well, especially now, feel that they can't open a show without some kind of big name recognition, because the theater industry is still suffering a little bit, is still not back to its pre-pandemic income, pre-pandemic weekly gross. And so I feel like they're trying to come up with creative ways, or maybe not so creative ways, of drawing audiences back in. And I think, like, a stunt cast is one of them.
Yeah.
Or a star cast is one of them.
In terms of this production, should it be on Broadway this season? Again, limited run, and I think even shorter than, like, Merrily, in my mind.
I mean, we are in a Sondheim renaissance.
Yeah, but people in the UK still haven't received their full refunds for the Sunday with Jake Gyllenhaal and Annaleigh Ashford. So maybe that's still in the queue and she'll just be, like, doing this and then hopping over to the West End. I think it's dead, but
that's,
like...
That's definitely never happening. Sorry, yeah. It's never happening.
Although, Sondheim renaissance, like, maybe it is happening.
Now it's the time. Yeah, it's funny. We are doing a lot of Sondheim since he's passed, but not a lot of Sunday.
No, not a lot. It's just, like, odd. The vibe is, I don't know.
Right before, you know, like, don't we say, like, Sunday, well, Merrily, but also Sunday is maybe his most autobiographical musical.
For sure.
In other people's opinions, not his own, but in other people's opinions.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, in the years before, the few years before he died, we saw a production here in Toronto, there was that Jake Gyllenhaal, Annaleigh Ashford production.
Yeah.
Maybe the popular one right before.
But I think it would be too soon to bring it back to New York after it just happened there. So, yeah,
so we're getting Into the Woods everywhere.
Yeah, we're getting literally everywhere.
No, Into the Woods is truly everywhere. There was, like, in Toronto here, we'll talk about it another episode, but there's kind of a few scattered productions in the Ontario, Southern Ontario area. There was one production last Halloween of
There was. Into the Woods we wanted that we didn't to see end up it. Seeing. Yeah, and then I think it was supposed to be done a certain way, and then, like, things peaked again with COVID, so it had to be, like, changed back, so, but yeah.
We were kind of like,
I know, yeah, it was, like, we weren't ready to, like, be back in a theater during that time. I mean, while we're, like, digging into revivals, I feel like we should just go through all, like, we've gone through all of them, but, like, any other key information. The only thing that we have not said, because this is truly, like, I don't know if this is going to happen, it is a very, like, small rumor at this point, but, like, Spring Awakening might be revived this year as
right.
well.
This is straight from Demois.
Yeah.
the Demois posting implies, I think, anyway, that the documentary and the Tony performance were testing the waters for a revival of Spring Awakening, and the Demois posting implies Eva Noblezada is going to star in it. Who is absolutely young and younger than us, but I think is
but
a little
too
bit old.
Old for the part.
A little bit old for the show. And there's, like, no other Demois casting information. But Demois was right about Merrily, so should we be trusting Demois?
Not just about Merrily, like, literally about everything they've been right
it's
about.
It's true.
So,
they get a lot of funny girl information. Every day I'm sending you Demois stuff.
I mean, not part of this season, but Lea Michele wishes it was part of this season, is Funny Girl. Like, she's stepping in, like, what feels like at the time when all of the fall shows are starting. And we were talking about, like, just before we started recording, how it seems like this is, like, a huge reopening. But no, they will not be eligible for any awards in the upcoming season.
No, it is definitely a reopening or, like, a relaunch of Funny Girl.
Yeah.
Especially as Beanie said, the show is going in a different direction.
Truly, different direction, new song, like, what? Yeah.
And it's not even My Man.
No.
Which I think is, if you're bringing Lea and you're adding a new song,
a song that she sings, like, literally at all of her concerts, yes, it should be My Man.
It should be My Man. Because that's what people are there for. They're going to see Lea in Funny Girl, they want to see her sing My Man. People are going to be like, Glee viewers are going to be like, where's My Man?
It's true.
Where is it?
But yeah, to go back a bit on the revivals, just to give a bit more information, Camelot is opening in March at Vivian Beaumont, directed by Bartlett Shear, written by Aaron Sorkin. So...
Oh, is that like a new book for
Or like adapted by Aaron Sorkin, yes.
Okay.
And
then there's also this like Pal Joey...
Oh yeah.
Rumor.
Yes. I don't think there's, like, any information attached to it other than I did see it on Playbill's schedule of upcoming and announced Broadway shows.
It was announced in 2021. So, and that's kind of the last
but,
we
like,
heard of it.
Nobody attached to it, right?
Well,
oh, it says Tony Goldwyn is directing. Like, Scandal Tony Goldwyn?
Yeah, Tony Goldwyn is directing. And Savion Glover, who... Love.
Yeah.
Richard LeGuerbonnais... writing will revise the book and add like new songs, but again, we haven't heard anything about this since literally a year ago, but they it seems like they had the whole creative team in place, but no
theater, no date,
no
cast at this point, at least publicly, I should say.
So now let's get back to new musicals, and I think let's start with the one we've seen, the one we're excited about.
A prop.
Anne Juliet. A prop is here.
I have a mug from Anne Juliet. Actually, a super cute mug. Their merch is really nice. We obviously have the Du Bois Band t-shirt. The mug has all of the songs that are in it in,
it's
like,
really cute.
Different colors, which is fun. I think they need some good show pins, because I would love to get a show pin from Anne Juliet. And even just the Anne symbol, I think, would be... cute enough.
That's kind of, that looks like the logo, the and symbol for
well, now it's
the
got
Broadway
the headphones.
Production. Yes.
With the heart.
Yes, but like the West End production.
It's different.
It's different, like, but the Broadway one is kind of the and symbol. Like
yeah,
the ampersand.
Like, I would say the West End production is basically the program that we have from Toronto.
We do need to work on that program. I do think it's kind of ugly.
Well, I really think it's going to be, because if you go on to, like, their website, or even, like, TodayTix, who's, I think, like, maybe the official ticket sponsor.
Their
of
ticketing
Andrea.
Partner.
Yeah, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty confident. Anyway, it's, like, black background with a pink heart. It says Anne Juliet, and then wearing, like, gold headphones.
That, like, Juliet wears when she first...
I do like it better than what this is, but yeah, she really only wears those headphones for like 5 seconds, so it's kind of like a choice, but jukebox, so makes sense.
Yeah, it's like we listen to it. Yeah,
yeah.
The artwork for this musical to me is not giving.
No, like not as hard as the musical goes, right?
No,
like
absolutely not. Like the way when we saw, let's say, Moulin Rouge, where like this artwork. Is giving.
Oh my
God.
It's
not giving to me.
Well, actually, like, funny to bring that up, because I am obsessed with the Boston Playbill that we had, which was, like,
the
navy.
The blue background.
Yeah, with the starry sky and then, like, the Moulin Rouge. I do love the black and red. I think it was a great choice to switch that. So jarring to see that in a sea of, like, other colors in New York.
It might be a budget situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
A budget situation. Yeah. The outside of that theater is like the nicest theater.
But to print the playbills, right? To print playbills in color is more expensive than to print them in black and white.
Which
so...
would make sense to completely lose the pink background and swap it for black. So
yes, and I feel like, I mean, I don't know how this works, but if you add maybe one color, it's less expensive than doing a full color one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know Wicked is still using the green, but it's only green, black, and white. Whereas like... some shows go to black and white really quickly. Some shows are in color the entire time. All depends.
That was a deep dive into playbills for you. You're
welcome. A deep dive. Thank you.
But yes, we're not going to touch a lot on Anne Juliet because we did do an entire episode. I'm so excited for this show to open. It's so funny because I feel like the last time we talked about it was a few months ago, and it closed in Toronto, had an amazing run. It was actually interesting to see Mirvish sent out a press release that said Anne Juliet sold to 90% capacity the entire time it was in Toronto, and that Kirschild sold to 100%, which I think, like, what an amazing reopening of theater here to get numbers like that. Mm-hmm. So great, and hopefully a bit of a tease of what's to maybe come for the rest of the season. Again, we'll talk about Toronto in our next episode. It's questionable, but I don't know. I'm hoping that, like, more people are open to seeing shows because, like, this was really exciting. It also helped that, you know, Anne Juliet was as good as it was. And then also, like, Kirschild is name recognition, so there's that.
And Juliet really built by word of mouth here in Toronto. It wasn't sold out. It wasn't, I mean, from specifically your word of mouth. It wasn't sold out in the first few weeks. It was very easy to get a rush ticket, very easy to get a last minute ticket.
Yeah.
But the last 3 weeks were 100% sold out here. I wanted to bring more friends, but sold out before I got the chance. That's an indication of what happens on Broadway. If it starts out maybe not being 100% sold and then with word of mouth builds and builds and builds, like, that can only mean good things for them.
Yeah, unfortunately for the general public, I told literally every single person I know to see this show, and they did. So, like, that's what happened to...
you are the PR person for Anne Juliet. And I think... We always say, hire us.
Hire me. Yeah. Because I feel like I personally brought a lot of ticket sales to that show. And also, like, I personally helped fund that show because I saw it 4 times. Not as good as... there was an email that I received, like, pretty early in the run that... there were some people that had seen Anne Juliet like 11 times, and this was only when the show had been on for like 15 performances or something like that. So there were more diehards than
honestly, I regret not seeing it 11 times.
I know. Like, I truly loved that show. I loved the way that show, like, made us feel in a theater. Like, that experience was so much fun. And that's something, like, I think is really exciting for an upcoming Broadway season. I know, like, last year... basically got a full Broadway season, but, you know, things were still up in the air a lot, and we're heading into fall, which things could be up in the air again,
always
virus wise but so many people that saw it that I know said, like, this is a show that, like, I feel like I needed to see right now specifically, which is amazing. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting is that a lot of people that I know that saw it that don't necessarily see a lot of theater were like, wow, this is going to do so well on Broadway. And I have, like, mixed opinions on that because, again, like, Moulin Rouge exists, Six exists, and then, like, everything else that's opening. But, I mean... if you're looking for a good time, it's top of list recommendation from me. So
I think something great, we talked about it in our last episode, was with Robert Marcus, and he talked about how Dear Evan Hansen is not something that a lot of people want to see over and over again. And Juliet is something that I think holds up every time to multiple viewings.
For sure.
Because I don't feel like you get bored, even if you do know what's going to happen. It's just fun every time.
Yeah.
And so I think that also lends it to being... a more successful production.
It was so funny.
I have good thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because at one point we were like, okay, could we get back to New York sometime this year? And then it was like, okay, but could we also get to New York sometime next year? And on both lists was Anne Juliet, even though we've seen it so many times.
Just seen it on Broadway.
Yeah, so at time of recording, I believe they're probably stepping into rehearsal this week, and they're opening at the Stephen Sondheim Theater because we did not even have that information when we did our Anne Juliet episode. It literally came out, like, that week. Media night at Mirvish was when the Broadway transfer was announced and the theater and that full cast. So, yeah, really exciting stuff. Again, like, friend of the podcast, Brandon Antonio, in that show, going to Broadway, watching his stories of him filming, of him, like, recording an original cast recording was, like, so exciting to me, so.
We knew him when, you know?
I know, right? And I can't wait to see what happens with that show, and I literally cannot wait for their Tony performance, because that's going to be so exciting.
So other shows that are opening, something that's had, a long life leading up to it is Almost Famous. I feel like we've been talking about this musical for... literal years. because that, where was the out of town? San Diego?
Yes.
starring.
But not La Jolla. Was it La Jolla? I don't think. No, it wasn't La Jolla. I'm pretty sure it was the Old Globe in San Diego.
Yes, I think you're right. The Old Globe. So starring Colin Donnell, who is no longer in the show. Cillian Pfeiffer, who's finally going to make her Broadway debut after.
I know.
After so many exciting things we've seen and heard her in.
Yeah.
Who's playing the kid?
Great question.
Great question. He's a Jimmy Award contestant.
Yes.
Whose name happens to be something like Casey Likes. Casey mm-hmm. Likes.
And he was in the original, like, Out of Town, yes. So he's transferred all the way through. And then playing his mother is Anika Larsson, who... I remember, do you remember, there was a Stars in the House episode months ago when Anika Larsson was like, Almost Famous is going to Broadway. And I immediately texted you to be like, oh my God, I think she just confirmed this. Like, we didn't know a date. We didn't know anything. It was, I want to say like January she really? Had confirmed that this was happening. Yeah. Mm. Because like, you know, Seth like, and James schedule. Just get anything out of people. Yeah. She's like, I'm really excited about this project I'm doing. And Seth obviously was like, Almost Famous. And she's like, yep, it's going to Broadway. And I was like, what?
Because there maybe was she was just manifesting it in that moment. Like,
well, but also, amazing. I feel like there was a time when we were like, is this going to make it this season? I don't know if it's going to make it this season.
A show that we've kind of maybe unfairly conflated with Almost Famous is Sing Street.
Yes.
Because we very much felt these shows should not open on Broadway in the same season.
No. And I don't know that they will, but... You know,
Sing Street has been on a journey. Sing Street has been on a journey.
The longest journey. Because we talked about them podcast. Years ago, too, right?
Yeah, because they were supposed to open spring of 2020 on Broadway at the Lyceum. Speaking of.
Yeah.
At the Lyceum. And then, obviously, that did not happen. And then it was
And announced. Not even, like, open on Broadway at the Lyceum. Like, we had tickets in our cart ready to go for, like, April.
Yes.
Like, this was happening.
They were selling, like, very discounted upper balcony tickets,
yeah.
if I recall. Like, $30
But it wasn't like, balcony. This could be happening. You're buying tickets to a theater you don't know. It was like, no, there were dates. No. There were shows. Like, it was happening.
Announced. Yeah. It was 100% announced. And then they were one of the first shows to be like, we're opening next year. You know,
which we were like, they respect.
Yeah, they weren't like pushing 3 months, 6 months.
Yeah.
They were like, we're just going to open next year.
Yeah.
And then when Broadway was starting to reopen, we didn't get an announcement from them at all. And currently, as we speak right now, or maybe it's just ended, there is a another out-of-town tryout in mm-hmm. Boston.
Yeah.
With a... almost completely different cast from what was the original off-Broadway run and what was planned to be the Broadway run.
Yeah.
Only like maybe 3 or 4 cast members who mm-hmm. have carried over into this new cast because people just cannot wait around for this long.
I did read a couple Broadway World board reviews and the general consensus is that it's good but still needs work. So
right. That was the consensus of the off-Broadway as well. I think
yeah.
that cast album I love. I
so
love
good.
It.
It's so good.
I love it. And I love that movie. But yeah, I am kind of nervous about it. And I think maybe Almost Famous, even though they're different, but they are kind of about kind of like rock bands.
It's similar music style for
similar
sure.
Music style, a little bit like 80s era.
But I would argue
almost
that
like 70s, but like...
Yeah, and also I would argue that Almost Famous definitely has more name recognition for that title than Sing Street does in terms of, like,
sure.
tourists coming in. And also, I, again, like, love the Sing Street score, but, like, Tom Kitt being attached also helps that project, like, move
yeah.
quicker to Broadway, I feel.
The one thing about Sing Street that I makes me really excited about it is that it is the same creative team as Once.
Yes.
Which is... one of my all-time faves, so mm-hmm. you know that makes me excited about it. But Almost Famous, I watched the movie Almost Famous for the first time actually over the pandemic, and I'm a big
right.
Cameron Crowe fan, and I know he's really involved in the musical as well because, and he's like really passionate about music. A lot of his movies entail music and involve people making music, and I do think that's a movie that really, as we say, sings.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could credit the TikTok creator that like gave me that vocabulary to say if a movie sings or not, whether it should be.
We use it all the time now.
We use it all the time. No, I can't remember who it was, but a TikTok creator said not all movies sing. And we'll talk about a movie that we think doesn't sing in a second.
Yeah.
That's being adapted into a musical, but Almost Famous as a movie sings. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it has music in it. It just means that those characters, like, have a song in them that they need to sing.
Well, and again, like, on our last episode, I had one of the songs as an obsession. And I think that that's, like, exactly what I thought it would sound like. We didn't even mention, Chris Wood is now starring in... in Almost Famous to play, like, the Colin Donald character.
Yes, the Billy Crudup.
Yeah.
We are Vampire Diaries fans.
I was going to say, I feel like this might be a bold statement, and I'm going to stand by it, but I think that Kai from the Vampire Diaries is the greatest villain created on a CW show ever.
Oh, with the caveat of CW, absolutely. I will go with it.
Like, ever.
When,
oh my God.
Not to get too graphic. When he stabbed, she was pregnant. It was crazy at Alaric. And what was her name's wedding? It was his sister.
Joe?
Yeah.
I think it was Joe. I say this as if I didn't just rewatch all of the Vampire Diaries during the pandemic. But, like, truly not a greater villain. And also, like, I think Chris Wood is someone, clearly, these are two very different characters, is, like, someone that can do it all. So I'm, like, very excited to see him in this.
No, absolutely. I'm very interested. Colin Donnell is hotter to me. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry about
but
that.
But also, like, Chris Wood has a great voice, which I'm shocked by. I also feel like Colin Donnell has a better voice, but, like, it's fine. We've moved past.
It's interesting because the pre-Broadway Out of Town, the previous one, was kind of a Songs for a New World reunion with Colin Donnell and Zilli Pfeiffer.
You're right.
And now it's no longer that. But
I love that cast recording. I still listen to it, like, every day. I love it so much. I just think he was busy. Like, we figured out that he was filming potentially during the workshop that they did in the spring. And I kind of feel that it was like you needed to be at that workshop to move forward with the project, and he just wasn't. Or maybe he has something coming up that, like...
Yeah, we don't know. Like, obviously, you know, things happen all the time. Things shuffle. Or he was doing something, and then they're like, okay, you're not available for this. We're going to bring something else in. And whenever you let's say someone else do your role, there's a chance that they're going to like what they did better.
Yeah. Is Chris Wood a stunt cast?
I don't think so. Because they're not really being like, Chris Wood in Almost Famous. You know what I mean?
I also don't think he's famous enough to be a stunt cast. Sorry to Chris Wood, but, like, I just don't think he is.
Sorry to your role as Kai in The Vampire Diaries is not, like, propelling your career forward.
Am I making up? Was he in Supergirl also? I know he's married to Melissa Benoist, but, like, was he in Supergirl? I think he was. Yes. Yeah.
He was, like, was he, like, Kal-El? No.
No. Honestly, CW mainstay, so... surprising he didn't show up on an episode of Riverdale.
Chris, who hasn't showed up on an episode of Riverdale? Mon-El on Supergirl.
Mon-El. I would have had Mon-El.
No.
I didn't watch it. I just saw a picture.
I quit Supergirl pretty quickly.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's move on to another show that I'm really excited about. Had an incredible off-Broadway, out-of-town run, and that's Kimberly Akimbo. This show received, like, some of the highest praise for a pre-Broadway... I don't even know if it was pre-Broadway at the time when it was playing, but, like, I'm just going to call it pre-Broadway project, starring Bonnie Milligan and Vicky Clark. We did talk about this in our... Was it our Way Too Early Tonys? It was something about, like, predictions of what could continue. Yes, it was Way Too Early Tonys. Because we thought there was a potential that it could have moved in last season. But obviously too crowded and for the best. Although, now that this season is so super crowded, I don't know if it was for the best. Because we'll see what happens by the time awards roll around.
Well, but maybe last season it didn't have... If it had, like, rushed itself into that season... Mm-hmm. Maybe it wouldn't have had the time, and now it's going to open this fall. It has time to, like, build momentum, build upon great reviews that it had off-Broadway, and it's not, like, going in the crowded, like, end-of-season rush. It's opening in the fall, which is turning out to also be crowded, but it has more time to breathe opening in the fall.
I really know, like, nothing about it, and I kind of want to keep it that way, although by the looks of the trailer, it gives me, like, Freaky Friday vibes, but better.
That's really not the energy I'm getting from...
You know, but Vicky Clark is, like, playing a 16-year-old. Wow, you didn't get that vibe from the trailer?
Maybe I know even less. Maybe I know even less than you.
I only say this because in the trailer, she's blowing out birthday candles that are six... Like, it spells out 1-6.
Kimberly Akimbo musical. Let's go to Wikipedia, guys. Okay. A lonely teenage girl, Kim, who suffers from a condition similar to progeria that caused her to age rapidly, thereby giving her the appearance of an elderly woman. And
okay,
how,
so not
according
Freaky
to Playbill,
Friday.
Forced to maneuver family secrets, borderline personalities, and possible felony charges. Oh. So I think the what maybe is the strength of this musical is that, so the book is written by David Lindsay Abaire, and it's based on his own comedic play from 2001. Yes. And so the structure, the story, was there good. Without music. And then they added music.
It's Jeanine Tesori's score.
Yes, so how can you go wrong? But yep. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times a musical sometimes feels like music first, music forward, and then a book to fit around this. No, this already had a strong book, a strong story without that. And then by adding the music, it just elevated it more.
Yeah.
And I also think opening the fall shows confidence, if that makes sense. Like, it's like, we do not need to, like, rush in there and not let you think about us. No, we want to give people a chance to see us, to talk about us, to recommend us to your friends. We know, we feel like we're going to run until the spring.
Mm-hmm.
I think it shows confidence.
Yeah, I also think that, like, this is exciting for Bonnie because obviously she made her Broadway debut in Head Over Heels, which was decently short-lived for her, and some would say that, like, she didn't get a chance to show what she can do. And I've only heard that this is a show that she can show everything that she can do. So that's pretty exciting. A lot of, like, Broadway people on their days off went to wherever this was playing to go see it. So it was a show that had a lot of, like, support around it to come to Broadway. So it's opening at the Booth in the fall. So it will be exciting to see that. And then opening, like, literally the next day, previews start the next day, is K-pop, which we briefly just touched on, has been around for years. And it is finally making its Broadway debut at Circle in the Square.
Let's talk about a stunt cast in K-pop.
Oh, I know. I forgot about literally the year of stunt cast. The year of the stunt cast.
This is a stunt cast because I need to Google because I'm not really up on my
K-pop knowledge.
K-pop stars.
Neither am I. I know.
Luna in the starring role, who is a K-pop singer, mm-hmm. along with fellow K-pop stars Kevin Woo, Min Young Lee, and Boyeon Kim. So it sounds like there's many K-pop people in it. The previous run
was Ashley Park,
Jason Tam,
yeah,
stuff like that. But yeah, I'm curious to see what the rest of the cast, like, is filled out as, because it hasn't been announced.
Zach Pizer is in it. Ensemble was announced. Yeah. Wow.
Oh,
so many tie-ins to our last episode. But yeah, Zach Pizer
is
in it.
It's not on Wiki. It's not on Wikipedia. So exciting. Oh. That's really exciting.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. Also, we've seen a couple, like, production photos from that first run. It just seems like neon lights, very cool. I don't know. Exciting stuff.
Anytime something's at the Circle, I get excited mm-hmm. because they have, like, a great space to work in. And one, there's no bad seats in the Circle, I think.
No.
Everyone is so, so close.
Yeah.
And I feel like they can really make it, give it, like, a club energy, give it a party energy in there. I want to see how they transform the space.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we were in there was for Oklahoma, and then the previous time was for Once on This Island. So,
yeah.
Like, it felt like you were walking into a completely different room between those two times, and I feel like it'll feel like you're walking into a completely different space again.
Yeah, I was just trying to find the choreographer from Anne Juliet because she is making her Broadway debut in Anne Juliet and in K-pop. And
oh, wow.
It's Jennifer Weber is the choreographer.
That's great because it's backup dancing style.
Yeah, I was going to say, this might be, like, naive of me, but are they going to sing in Korean at all?
Because I don't know.
That would be exciting. If they do.
You know, I mean, again, my K-pop knowledge is really limited to BTS singing Smooth
yeah.
Like Butter. So I know that for crossover appeal, a lot of times they do sing in English. My guess would be it's predominantly in English.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll do, like, any sort of stuff because I mean, speaking of a show that could attract a lot of tourists, like, K-pop is that.
Sure.
The K-pop
especially with the casting.
Yeah, the casting one, also the fan base for, like, K-pop in general is so huge that, you know, if you're in New York just to, like, shop around and you see that there's a show featuring, like, K-pop star, you'd probably go and see it. The other thing that's really exciting is that There are 19 Broadway debuts in this show. And because of that, a few weeks ago, again at time of record, you could buy tickets for $19 anywhere in the theater. Wow. So, yeah, they're trying to do like fun, innovative things for ticket sales on that show too. So, yeah, I don't know. It's exciting because I think it's been in the works for like over 5 years.
The Off-Broadway premiere was at Ars Nova in 2017.
So, yeah,
and
it's
then
been a long time.
Waiting for the theater. There was supposed to be a pre-Broadway at the Signature Theater that was canceled due to COVID, casting, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And now the circle's open. They've got the cast. It's happening. It's real. Even like a couple years ago, there was like open casting calls for it.
Yes,
that we
during
kept
the
seeing.
Pandemic.
So
yeah,
we kept being like, oh, open casting calls for K-pop. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And now it's actually here.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm excited for K-pop.
Okay, moving on. This is opening a few weeks later. Some Like It Hot. This is based on the movie Some Like It Hot. Mm-hmm. Wow, so many like adaptations this year.
Always though.
Yeah. Is this a Shaman and Whitman?
It is a Shaman and Whitman.
Shaman and Whitman.
They really have a niche in their musical stylings, and it's the '60s, the '50s and sixties. Because Hairspray. Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Like Hot.
But
we're
I do
really,
think...
We're really in a certain era of
But I think the 50s and 60s is, like, better for them than, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right? So, like, stay here. Let's stay here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, the song Some Like It Hot that's out, it sounds like a great throwback. It sounds so much fun. It so suits that era. Their musical sounds like suit that era so well. Everyone sounds amazing on it. This is a musical that I feel... Maybe
we've
suffered.
Talked about many times, I feel.
Yes, but maybe has suffered at the hands of being, let's say, the third in a line of what we'll, like, not affectionately call Man in a Dress musicals.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're doing a few things right. Casting J. Harrison Gee as one of the, I've never seen this movie, in one of the principal roles. And also casting so much more diversely than the movie.
Yeah.
This movie starred Marilyn Monroe and obviously starred white people only. And
yep.
This musical seems to be cast extremely diversely, which is really exciting to see.
Mm-hmm.
But I will reserve judgment.
Yeah, they're doing something right now, I want to say, or maybe in a few weeks at time of episode record, which is like a Some Like It Hot speakeasy. So they're trying to some, I guess, more innovative ways to promote this project, because I do think a lot of people are like us and already have our, like, I don't know, like, blinders up. We can't...
Post-Tootsie, post-Doubtfire wariness.
Yeah, for sure. And both of those shows... I mean, Doubtfire, like, barely had a life, I want to say, on Broadway. And Tootsie, like, did better. It's still on tour, but still the notion of Man in a Dress is still there. The other thing it has going for it is directed by Casey Nicholaw. And I assume he's probably choreographing as well.
He knows how to... put on a good time.
Feels like a good match of like Casey, Shaman, and Whitman. I don't know if they've worked together before, but it seems right.
Yeah, I don't know either. We haven't even talked about Christian Borle, who recently played his final performance in Little Shop. Finally.
Yeah.
I'm excited for anything he ever does because I think he's wonderful, even though this to me is slightly questionable. This is interesting. There was supposed to be an out of town, but there never has been.
I feel like this was announced like kind of a while ago. And then also like, this is not even on our list of potentials because it's definitely not coming this year, but like Bombshell, the musical, which would be Shaman and Whitman. So I feel like...
Right. Another kind of similar era.
And also Marilyn Monroe. So
yeah,
it's like, choose one and not the other right now. And, you know, like Christian Borle being attached to this, it makes sense to me too. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. And I don't know that I care to see it. Sorry.
I think maybe the final last thing that makes me maybe slightly more excited, the book is written by Matthew Lopez, who wrote The Inheritance, and Amber Ruffin, who I know best as being one of the writers on Seth Meyers. And I really like her. I really like her style of comedy. I really enjoy. And again, Matthew Lopez, like, is a queer writer, has written queer stories for theater, for Broadway. He's also adapting, though I'm like a little wary of that, one of my favorite books, Red, White, and Royal Blue, that they just filmed for Amazon Prime, another queer story. So,
oh, I didn't know he was doing that. That's fun.
Yeah, he directed that.
Oh, wow.
You know, what's come out about that movie, I'm not super excited about it now, based on how I was before they started filming and before information was coming out. So when that comes out, whatever. But, like, if he was passionate about that book, and, like, me too,
yeah,
I'm excited to see what he can do with this, and I, like, kind of trust him in that way. So, like, they're not, the writers of this are maybe coming from a place of lived experience.
Right.
In a way that, I don't know if Doubtfire or Tootsie were.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're doing something right, or maybe not.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
We will reserve judgment for now.
Yeah. And then to end off the new musicals, before we get into the ones that could have a life, could not have a life, is A Beautiful Noise, which is the Neil Diamond biopic musical starring Will Swanson. But like in my mind,
okay,
Sweet Caroline needs to be at the right moment, and also like
it's definitely the curtain call.
Do we care about anything else in this show other than that song?
Truly, I'm not really familiar with any songs besides Same. Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond. Here's what I think I would need to enjoy Beautiful Noise. Sweet Caroline would need to open the show. It would need to end Act 1. It would need to open Act 2.
And end the show.
And it would also be... I think it is in the curtain call, because you want to get the audience like...
We're looking at four. Like one full and then three reprises is what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. A beautiful... Here's the thing. I love Will Swenson. I think he's got a beautiful voice.
Oh, and Robin Herder also starring.
Yeah, so these are, it's a great cast.
I will not see this musical. I will not see this musical. 1000% will not see this musical. Love you, Will Swenson. I'm sure you're fantastic, but I will not see this musical.
I feel like, wait till it's on tour.
Even then, I don't care. I just like, we did an entire episode on biomusicals. Everyone knows my thoughts on a biomusical. There's only been like one or two that have made me feel something. And I'm sorry, Neil Diamond, it's not going to be this one. I also heard it's not great. The book is like weird. The way that the framing device, I'm not 100% sure, so I'm not going to go through it, but I've heard that the framing device is strange.
Interesting. Yeah, it's not getting me excited anyway. Way, let's see, like, MJ would get me excited.
Totally.
And maybe the key is you have to be passionate about the
Neil
artist.
Neil Diamond?
And I am not passionate about Neil Diamond. But there probably is definitely an audience for a Neil Diamond
Well,
musical.
Just, I mean...
It's just not me.
No, and I agree, but I also agree with you, like, beautiful, there was obviously an audience for that, and I think it's the same kind of crowd, to be honest.
Right. Yeah, I can't be mad, but I'm also... I actually feel maybe no emotions towards this.
No, I just won't see it. You never know with the trajectory of how the Tony Awards has been the last few years. Like, maybe Will Swenson will be walking away with a Tony Award for his portrayal of Neil Diamond.
Well, yeah, now I'm, like, looking around. What else has, like, a lead man in it, let's say? I guess, like, Some Like It Hot?
I guess, but I don't even know who the character would be. Oh, Almost Famous.
Well, oh, the younger guy Casey likes. Because I feel like Chris Wood would be in featured, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And Juliet is only featured men. But yeah, I guess, okay, Into the Woods.
Oh,
but BDJ didn't perform opening night, so I don't know how that
Okay, but,
anything.
Sorry, Merrily. We've got Merrily.
Right. Sorry, I guess. Yeah, we've got two there in Merrily.
And also, again, if Sweeney Todd, we've got Josh Groban.
But yes, I am seeing more women, like, lead roles. Like, I would say Kimberly Akimbo, lead women.
Oh, yeah, I think in comparison to other years...
And Juliet, obviously.
The female categories are probably very difficult in this coming season, which is exciting, because it's not always like that. No. Okay, let's talk about the potentials. Some of these will be repeats from previous episodes, because some of them have been potentials for years.
Announced for sure, Back to the Future.
True. Forgot about that. Oh, there's a male lead right there.
Yes. Well, yes. So I don't know who's going to play. I'm assuming Roger Bart's going to come over.
It would be a... I have not seen Back to the Future on the West End, but it would be a tragedy to not bring Roger Bart over.
Especially because he's American. I'm assuming he's coming over.
And I've heard he's phenomenal in this.
I'm guessing they're going to cast a new Marty McFly, though.
I agree. I also feel like if you are within the age range of, like, 25 and 35, this is the part you want to play on Broadway, so...
Too old, almost. 18!
But 18-year-olds are so young these days, it feels.
They are young, but Marty McFly's a teenager. He's a teen.
I know, like, very little about Back to the Future. It's, like, pretty high on a list next year to see, because I've heard that West End production was out of this world, and that the DeLorean is, like, next level, so.
Have really only heard wonderful things about it, and this is a movie that sings, like.
Oh, totally.
This is a movie that sings. Yeah. So, I'm excited to see what they... Who wrote the score for this?
I don't know, but I was going to say that, like, the Back to the Future website has, like, coming to Broadway on it, but we just don't know when. Just spring.
It's a spring. Musical lyrics by Alan Silvestri and Glenn Ballard. So, Glenn Ballard co-wrote and produced Jagged Little Pill.
Like, yeah.
Alan Silvestri composed music for... He worked with Robert Zemeckis and composed music for feature films, including... Back to the Future. So he was involved in the movie. So, okay. So that's pretty exciting.
Also, so many West End transfers. Like, this is insanity that this is happening this year. It's very exciting. Although, I do wish that sometimes they would bring over, like, a full cast. They absolutely never do this. But...
The union.
I know. I mean, speaking of West End transfer, let's put it back on the list. ALW Cinderella. He claims it is in the season. We have no information about it, though.
No, we don't know. I'm not that excited about that. Whatever to me.
Me either. But it's got Broadway theater written all over it if it happens.
I agree. The Broadway theater, especially because if they did that trick that they did on the West End, where kind of like...
That truly might be the best part of the show.
Where, like, was it, like, the first two rows kind of
I think it was up
around?
To, like, the first four rows were, like, rotating around
first,
during a
The first
ballroom.
Two rows kind of rotate. But that was, I think, rigged in that theater already.
Yes. They could do
so
it.
So, who knows what they would do here.
Sticking with the character of Cinderella, which don't ask me why this show has this character in it, but Once Upon a One More Time.
Yeah, what's going on there?
So they did do an out-of-town in... November of 2021, and that's all we know about it. But Justin Guarini was in it.
Well, we love Justin Guarini, friend of the podcast. but yeah, I
someone else was in
know.
It. I always say this to you. I think it was Emily Skinner was in it.
Emily Skinner,
like from Sideshow.
Yes, I agree. Someone else was in it.
But yeah, I it would be. Hilarious to me if there was two basically Britney Spears jukebox musicals running on Broadway at the same time.
I feel Once Upon a One More Time at the Palace. No. At the Palace. Yes, I feel...
So then not this season. Maybe next season. But also, yeah. I don't think we need this at all.
No, I don't know if we know. I need to know more.
And we just don't because there's zero information out there. Okay, continuing on... recently, I would say most recently announced for spring 2023, New York, New York. We know absolutely nothing about it except for it's
a Kander and Ebb score
with help from Lin-Manuel Miranda.
So it's a Kander and Ebb score, but obviously Fred Ebb is no longer with us. So John Kander, with a collaboration of Lin-Manuel Miranda, is working on bringing it to Broadway in the next season, as they've done for a few Kander and Ebb scores since Fred Ebb has died. Including mm-hmm. something like The Visit, let's say.
Yeah.
So, exciting stuff.
The funniest to me is that every single article that came out when this was announced was like Lin-Manuel Miranda and then comma John Kander. And even Lin was like, guys, it's not me. Like, I am just mm-hmm. helping out. But they're clearly looking for a selling point here. And he is the selling point.
Sure, sure. Kander and Ebb wrote the song New York, New York. So I'm assuming that will be in it. And yeah, I know. Funny. So yeah, I'm very curious to see what this is.
Yeah.
Because I think it could be obviously hit or miss. But I always think like if there are more Kander and Ebb songs that we haven't heard, I want to hear them.
Yeah,
I would like to hear them. And so we'll see how successful this show is.
Another show that was announced, I want to say in 2021, we have zero information on it, Pal Joey. That's it. That's all I can give you.
It's a revival. It would be a revival.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all I got from that as well.
And then I guess, like, two more that I don't think there will be a life on season. I will save the two main two, the ones that we've talked about the most, till right after this. But I would say Chasing Rainbows, which is currently playing at Paper Mill at time of record. Actually, that's not true. It's opening in October. So it hasn't even opened yet.
Is this a Judy Garland?
Yes. Max von musical. Essen is in it. Leslie Margarita is in it. So I don't know anything really about it other than it's like a Judy Garland story of some sorts, which I do think would work on Broadway. I just don't know if it fits this season.
It might be a little dark. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And then the other one is the Griswolds Broadway Vacation, which is directed and choreographed by Donna Fior.
Well, yeah, like, not to talk about, but Broadway Vacation and also, let's say, Bruce, which is the Jaws Bruce. Musical starring Jared Spector as Steven Spielberg, because he only plays real people.
both miss you on Broadway, Fior. Jared Spector. Like, really
we
do.
We do. Miss you all the time. Miss your voice. Both directed by Donna Fior.
Yeah.
There are workshops. I would say Broadway Vacation is a little more advanced than Bruce.
Like, they had a run. They had a run in Seattle, September 10th to October 1st. I know Kate Rockwell was in that cast. And
Hunter Foster.
I do think it's a good idea. As someone that loves the Griswold Family Vacation movies, I think this works. It's also, I don't know, I feel like we have a lot of, like, musical comedies, but this is a different style of comedy, and I hope that they lean into that style of comedy. But yeah, I don't know if it's, like, ready to come next season. So
I want Donna Fior to direct on Broadway. She's not, as we've talked about, she's not doing next Stratford season.
Yeah.
She's taking a little break. She's got, you know, some irons in the fire, including these two musicals. So I want to see them.
I would like to see Broadway Vacation before we see Bruce, but that's just me.
Well,
we'll talk about it in our next episode, the other Jaws musical that's coming to Toronto.
Is it a musical
or
just a play? Is it just a play? The Shark is Broken?
Oh.
I thought it was a play.
Oh, no. So, well, I'll find out. So we'll see what happens there.
Doesn't matter.
And then to finish it off, the final two. Yeah. The ones that we've been talking about for literal years. Let's talk about the one that finished its run at Chicago, and that's The Devil Wears Prada.
Elton John, what are you doing? What are you doing? let's talk about a movie that does not sing.
No. And after reviews, not sure the musical sings either. Sort of at level. I'm sure you're great, but like,
no,
man.
And maybe it's just, like, being too attached to that, like, source material of the movie, which I think is so wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
But the character of Miranda Priestley is so, I've always felt, like, internal. And, like, she's not someone who's going to break out to song. She's very, like, you know, she cuts you with a look. She mm-hmm. would never do, like, a full, I don't know, belty number. She's not a showy person. She, like, just how she walks, like, speaks for itself. How she dresses speaks for itself. So, for Beth Lovell, I always think of her as a little more, like, OTT. A little over the top. A little more brash. Mm-hmm. So, I don't quite see the marriage of character to actress there.
I've also read that, like, again, Beth Lovell, we know, so amazing. Has such an incredible voice. And I've heard she's very underused vocally in this show. Especially when, like, trying to make this movie sing. And then I've just heard that, like, all the side characters are just very underdeveloped.
Well, I've heard the kind of the best side character is Nigel, who is played by Stanley Tucci in the movie, played by Javier Munoz in this production, and he kind of gets the best numbers.
Yeah.
He is kind of the best character in the movie anyway.
For sure.
I want to see what they did with Emily, the character of Emily, because that's also kind of the star of the movie.
Destroyed is what I've read.
Really?
Yeah, destroyed. Upsetting. I've also heard that, like, the costumes are not great because they had issues, which rightfully so, like, they couldn't use Prada at all. Right. So, no, like, nothing on the merch actually says Prada. And then, like, you can't use, like, fake tags because it becomes, like, bootleg of items, right?
Right, so they can't, they don't have actual designer stuff in the show. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yes,
so I've seen... So it makes the costumes look a little cheap.
I've seen, like, some of the costume video, like, some of the stills and stuff, and a lot of the costumes were giving 80s.
And the, like, vibe just seems modern. Wrong. I know.
Yes, yes. Broadway Bob, who is a Chicago, I don't know if he's a theater critic anymore, but he's in Chicago, and I've been, like, paying attention to his reviews on it, and he's kind of spoken a bit about it, and he's kind of, like, my source. But I will say, when I was in New York a month-ish ago, I was talking to some people at the drama bookshop, and they're like, yes, it's Broadway ready. And I was like, is it?
I think it needs at least one more out-of-town, possibly two. This is from not knowing much about it, other than seeing that one promo video, which, like, can't believe that Taylor Imon Jones was not in the promo video because she had COVID. Crazy. And then two, the music is just, like, not it. Oh, wait! Good.
Which is a disappointment.
Speaking of Elton John, he's working on something. What is he working on? Tammy Faye?
You're absolutely right.
No, it's not.
Yes!
Is it Tammy Faye?
No, it is the Tammy Faye!
With Andrew Rannells. So that was also interesting because it was like, okay, so Elton John has completely thrown out the Devil Wears Prada and has moved straight into this Tammy Faye
project. He could be working on multiple things at once.
He's definitely not revising the Devil Wears Prada.
That's the thing. This is my other concern. I love a good Elton John musical score. The Lion King, wonderful. Billy Elliot, wonderful. Aida, wonderful. But it very much feels like he wrote the songs, gave them to the production team,
and was like, said, bye.
Goodbye. And then kind of Shayna Taub is probably in the trenches as a collaborator writing lyrics. And whoever is orchestrating or arranging the songs is probably, you know, puzzle piecing together bits of Elton John's score. But it doesn't sound like he's there, or during this out-of-town run, he was there every day doing notes, rewriting songs, adapting, seeing it on stage. It doesn't sound like he was that involved in the creative process in that way, the way I think I want a composer to be involved.
100%. So, like, he was on tour, like, during this.
He's a busy man. I don't, like, maybe this is too much of a commitment for him at this time. Me telling Elton John, maybe
scale it back a bit.
But it reminds me kind of, and it's a little bit different because Elton John's written many musicals before very successfully, but when I was reading the Spider-Man book, it's like Bono and the Edge were very busy. They're busy people. Mm-hmm. So then they would come and like spend like half a day writing songs. So they weren't putting a lot of forethought into what they were doing. They weren't, you know, at every rehearsal because, again, they were busy people. So they would come, write a song, hand it off, and then really not be there to do for the evolution of a show during an out-of-town or a preview process.
Which is like kind of terrible for the cast involved too. You know, like you think you're signing on for a huge name property movie, and then also Elton John. Like, I don't know. If you want to change things with the main man, I feel like you should be able to. So it's hard. And I feel like the complete opposite is what's currently happening also in Chicago with The Notebook, because Ingrid Michaelson is, like, all in and has been all in for years.
She's excited. I think she's really excited about it. I almost feel like her Broadway career started when she stepped into Great Comet for a couple weeks many years ago.
I thought you were going to say when she started dating Will Chase, but...
Well, no, that happened after. And maybe fell in love with the world. And now she's writing this Notebook musical, or she wrote this Notebook musical. We'd heard about the workshop maybe like 3-ish years ago, pre-pandemic.
Oh, we were ready for it with that cast. Yeah.
And then the song Words came out, which I was really excited by.
Yeah.
I'm also really excited about the storytelling tool of having like 3 people playing Allie, 3 people playing Noah, to represent kind of the 3 points in their life. If you've seen the movie, you know about like those 3 different eras. Mm-hmm. There's another song out. At time of record, the first preview hasn't even happened in Chicago, but it will have happened by the time the episode is out. This is something I'm excited for. I do think this movie sings. What do you think?
I think parts of it sing. I don't think all of it sings. Again, I, like you, Words is stunning. The second song, If This Is Love, is good, but it's not as good as Words. Right. So, but we also know nothing else about it. I'm just a little nervous about this subject matter in general because I think it's so beloved by people that, like, if it's not exactly like the movie, people are going to be upset about it. And we already know it's not going to be exactly like the movie. So no, I think it might be hard to, I think it will be easy to get butts in seats with a name like that. But once you're there, you might be disappointed.
What, I don't know why, but I'm getting Bridges of Madison County energy from this.
I agree. And
you know how I feel about that.
Yes.
It wasn't a hit.
No.
It wasn't successful.
No.
But I loved it.
Yeah. I also think that they might be walking into a bit of a difficult situation with kind of an unknown cast, and hoping that name recognition is enough. Now, maybe this is just the out of town cast and maybe things will change. Should this come to Broadway? I don't think it's ready for this season. I really do not.
We shall see once the previews start happening.
I know, but you made a good point a few weeks ago that it's playing at Chicago Shakes, and that's not a place that you transfer something immediately.
Directly, yes.
It needs another run.
Well, Six is the first Chicago Shakes to Broadway transfer ever.
But it did have runs in between.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it didn't go directly from there. It played a few other places.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, The Yard is such a great theater.
It's tiny, though. So, like, it's so much. It's like,
I love the way it's, like, laid out. Like,
I agree.
Circular.
It was one of the, like, my favorite theaters that we've ever been to after being there. But the Broadway theaters are, like, three times the size of that. And
absolutely.
I think they need to play at a bigger house first before they make it to, like, the biggest stage.
Sure.
So, and I also think that this is a show that they could bring some, like, heavy hitters in. Like, we really thought Antonio Cipriano was going to be in this show. And the fact that he's not is, like, depressing.
Busy filming National Treasure or whatever he's doing.
Yeah. So, I don't know. And I think it's also, like, one, I think it's really exciting that she's doing this. Again, Robert Marcus touched on this in our last episode. But, like, it's always great to see a pop singer, like, dive into this world. So, I don't know. I'm, like, hesitant and excited, but I also don't think it's coming.
I want to hear more music, and I want to hear what people are saying.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
If anyone's going to previews of The Notebook, like,
Broadway Bomb in Chicago, please go.
Again, by the time this episode, yeah, so we'll get your review.
Maybe I should be commenting on his TikToks today, being like, are you going to
the opening night?
The first preview of The Notebook.
I know. Something interesting about this, too, was that they did have $20 tickets for this show, and it wasn't like a under 30 situation. It was like, this is a promotion happening at The Yard. So there was an affordable way to see this, which doesn't always happen with, again, like a huge name like The Notebook. So, but if this opens on Broadway and like Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling aren't at opening night, I'll be upset.
I feel like Rachel would go, Ryan would not.
You know who else would be there? James Marsden, as he should
James
be.
James Marsden would be there. James Marsden would absolutely
as he should
be there.
Be.
Here we go.
Yeah.
He loves a musical.
Yeah.
So. He loves a musical. I can see him there.
Yeah. And I think that is all potentially for this coming season. We've kind of hit on, like, a lot.
Fall is pretty set, but spring, it still needs to take shape, so I'm sure there's a lot of things that we don't even know are happening at all yet.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even discussed the, like, 20 million plays that are opening on Broadway. Actually, great article. Vulture posted the 29 plays and musicals we can't wait to see this fall. And in the article, there are 5 Pulitzer Prize-winning plays on Broadway in the next season. So that's
exciting.
We also have a brand new name change for The Court. It's now James Earl Jones, and Audra McDonald is opening a show. And yeah, there's like a lot of stuff happening. We don't have an update on The Palace. We know it was lifted, and that's all we know.
It's lifted. Yeah, I'm hoping The Palace will be reopened because there's a lot of empty theaters right now, but I'm thinking soon we're going to be short on real estate. So
I don't think there's a lot of empty. I mean, there's a lot of turnover for plays,
right,
but like I just read The Music Box is full, and I didn't know that it was full. There's a play that's going in there. So
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I agree. By the time we hit like Feb, March, kind of not a lot of space to put shows. So we'll have to see what happens. Well, that is our New York season preview. We are hoping to get to New York at this stage in the new year. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of good stuff out. Although I might be in New York like in 3 weeks post episode release, and we'll see
TBD,
what I see.
TBD.
But yeah, I think it's a very interesting season. A lot of suncast, a lot of starcast, a lot of name players coming in. So it will be interesting come Tony Award time. And in just a few months, you will hear our Way Too Early Tony nominations for this upcoming season. Maybe we'll have locks at this point for shows that are transferring in. But yeah.
We'll know more about the season in January.
Mm-hmm. But before we wrap it up, it is now time for our obsession of the week.
So my obsession of the week, when I was in New York last, I was lucky enough to catch the off-Broadway show Between the Lines playing at the Tony Kaiser Theater, Second Stage, which is a nonprofit, which is really exciting. My feelings on the show, it needs work.
Why it was not included in the transferring to Broadway this season.
So after I watched the show, Jodi Picoult was actually in the audience there, and she did a little talk back after, and she very much said, we're trying to get the show to Broadway. Go on ShowScore, leave a review, tell people you loved it. Word of mouth really helps. They were like
pushing
it. Actually, in the bathroom line, I was talking to someone. They're like, what do you think of the show? And I was like, oh, it's so fun. You know, that like fake thing that you do. And she's like, and I was like, what do you think of it? She's like, I'm actually a friend of Jodi's. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's fine.
I remember you texted me at intermission being like, I don't know about this show. And then you texted me at the
end. I think it's bad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You said it was bad, but like there were moments. And then at the end of the show, you were like, I've just sobbed for the last 15 minutes.
Yes. So here's what happened to me. Act one, I thought was actively bad. There were moments. My favorite moment was probably like the song Inner Thoughts. That was really funny.
Yeah, we watched that there's like a clip of it. Weeks ago. Yeah.
It's funny. There's a clip of it online. It's really funny. There's also a song called like Mr. Darcy or like When I Mr. Darcy. It's about like book crushes and the way book crushes have evolved. That was fun. And I think the song Another Chapter, which is pretty early,
yeah.
Fun. And there are fun moments, but it really came across the entire show as very juvenile, very young. And I, in a way that not all shows about high school students do, this one came across as really young feeling.
Mm-hmm.
However, Act Two happened and I was like, oh my God, I don't like this. This is not good. Act Two happened, emotionally wrecked me. I was a puddle by the end. I was literally made up of only tears. It was so embarrassing. There was a talk back after and I was just like,
wiping.
Crying. You actually had to wear masks still in the theater, but I had to take my mask off to like clean up the tears. Now there is my favorite song in the show was a song sung by the Mermaids. It's called Do It For You. At the moment, there's really a 40-second clip on YouTube. They did record a cast album, so hopefully that will be out soon, but it is not out at time of record. I want that cast album just so I can hear that specific song. Who sings it was Ren Rivera. And their voice just slayed me, mm-hmm. Truly slayed me. They play multiple characters. Everyone in the show plays multiple characters, except for Ariel Jacobs. And the character that they play kind of in the modern times versus in the storybook are so completely different. I did not realize it was the same person. And when they're singing this mermaid song, it was the highlight of the show. In the talk back, they're like, any questions? They're like, can we talk about the mermaid song?
Oh, so like
everyone
not
was asking
you.
About it. No, it wasn't just me. Everyone was like, this song, it was so much fun, an absolute blast. And it was the highlight of the show. And I think it was part of the reason why Act Two is so much more successful than Act One. Another reason why I think Act Two is so much more successful than Act One is because you've been pulled into the storybook.
Mm-hmm.
Act One completely takes place, or almost like our main character is in the normal world, and at the end of the act she's pulled into the storybook, so you're getting glimpses of it, but she's outside of it. When she gets pulled in, I'm like, okay, now we're getting somewhere, now something exciting is happening. And I think maybe we could have pulled her in much earlier, spent more time there, instead of just kind of having like little sneak peeks of it in Act One. I felt like that was where it was more exciting, and I just feel like they needed to work. I don't know, they needed to do some things. Julia Murney, severely underused.
Right.
Which we knew. She sings like a big song in Act Two, but it felt very much like So Big, So Small, light. Like it wasn't doing anything original there. Like she's like an overworked single mom going to school, as you do. And I'm like, okay, we need originality. We need originality. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't feeling that. So I don't think it's Broadway material. I do think it would be great licensed. I want to see schools do it. I think because it's about reading, it's about books, it's wonderful. But I can't wait for this cast album to come out so I can listen to Do It For You on repeat every day of my life.
And so I can listen to it because you've been talking about it for months.
I've been talking about the song because it's so good. You can take it from me. Really wonderful moments in the show, but overall, I don't think it's Broadway material.
I think that's fair. I also feel like you're not alone in that review.
No, I've heard other people use the word juvenile.
Yes.
It's the word that was in my mind as I was leaving, and I heard other people say that, and I was like, okay, so it's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to fix it, but maybe just scrap it.
Right.
If Broadway is their goal, I don't think they have enough
right
to do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
okay, Tara, what's your obsession?
Sticking with high school, season 3 of High School Musical, the series, has been out. Actually, I think by the time episode is released, it is over, which is sad because they had less episodes this season than in previous seasons. And, I mean, will we talk about this? Maybe we'll talk about this more in our, like, year interview as we do all the time. But, like, nothing will ever match the energy of season 1 of High School Musical, the musical, the series. But episode 5 was pretty close. Truly the greatest episode of the entire series. I don't even know why it was so good, but it was so good.
So funny.
It was so funny. But my obsession this week is the performance that Josh Bassett and Sophia Wiley did of What Do You Know About Love from Frozen the musical, which I don't know why this like went completely over my head that they would do musical songs in this show. But it did. I just thought that they were going to do movie songs. This version is super fun. It's very, like, pop, hip-hop-y. And I don't think the recording does it justice. I think you need to watch the scene because everything that's going on is amazing.
So what do you know about love?
Wow, you're really strong.
What do you know about love?
I lift a lot of ice.
At least we know one thing. This trip should be interesting. What do you know about love? What do you know about love?
And if anyone thought that Josh Bassett was going to play anyone else but Kristoff, like, what were you thinking?
He has Kristoff energy.
Yeah. But truly, episode 5, a masterpiece. And I would watch it again right now. So yeah, that's my obsession this week. And that is our New York season preview. In 2 weeks from now, you will hear our Toronto season preview. Lots of good stuff happening in Canada too. So stick around for that episode. And if you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can do that by subscribing to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it if you left us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also watch us on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @OffToBeAwayPodcast with the number 2, and let us know what show you're most excited for this upcoming Broadway season.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.